So, short series about race, and really it's going to overlap into racism and class and cultural discrimination as well. Even if we don't every week sort of talk about those things, it will be obvious, I think, that there are overlaps and similarities and things to think about in all those areas. So that's what we're about. Let's just define terms, and particularly for this series, and especially today, the handout is very extensive. So if you have a handout, that's great. If you want to kind of find the Friday email and click on the handout, that's good. The PowerPoint has got most of the stuff on it, but the handout has got more. But if you go away from the sermon and think, oh, I can't remember what he said, most of it is in the handout this week. So hopefully you can use that. So first is a bit of a complicated, it looks more like a kind of college lecture for the first bit. You've got this table of some definitions, because definitions are important. So race, what do I mean at least when I talk about race? And the answer is physical characteristics and shared ancestry that define a person as being a member of a particular group. Physical characteristics, shared ancestry that define someone as being part of a group. So it could be skin colour, hair colour, texture, living in a particular area for a long time amongst a particular group of people, facial features, physical build. So it's mostly physical, but it is also to do with shared ancestry. That's race. Second thing is ethnicity, which is derived from a Greek word. Ethnicity is more to do with cultural characteristics that define someone as being part of a particular group. So you're a particular ethnic group because of cultural characteristics more than to do with physical characteristics. So it could be language, could be accent, could be religion, it could be styles of dress, hairstyles, social customs, food preferences or laws or restrictions, all those kind of things, including the kind of music you listen to and so on. So that's connected with ethnicity, if it's kind of connected with a definite group of people from a particular place. So that's ethnicity. Third thing is nationality, which is the legal status and the emotional sense of belonging to a particular, specific political nation. So it's legal status, but also to some degree, the emotional sort of connection, that sense of belonging. So there's citizenship, but there's also nationalism. So that's to do with nationality. To do with class, really it's the area of defining people by social or economic or educational status. And the kind of examples of that would be middle class, working class. These days, those are not perfect definitions. It's just kind of a series of letters that define the different classes from A through to E, I think it is, but with C subdivided. So that's class. And then racism, which is the kind of main topic, the thread that's going to run through this whole series. Racism is to give unfair treatment or harm or undervalue someone because, and that's really important, they belong to a particular race. So it's to give unfair treatment or to harm someone or to undervalue someone because they belong to a particular race. It's not to say unfair treatment is okay if it's not because they belong to a particular race, but that's the definition of racism, because it's connected with belonging to a particular race. That's not to be confused with treating somebody differently, which might be helpful and loving. So that's the definitions out of the way. So that's what I mean. Why are we looking at this topic is a reasonable question. If it starts off a bit like a kind of lecture, why are we doing that? This is not a kind of sociology class that we're at. We're seeking to look at God's word. So why? It's worth asking because, for one thing, the Bible doesn't really ever define ethnic groups by physical characteristics. You could point me to some Old Testament passages where people are described as being tall, but apart from that, that's pretty much it. You know, individuals might be described as having particular characteristics, but in terms of ethnic groups, it's not really there. in the Bible. But the Bible does have a lot to say about tribes and nations and ethnicities and indeed languages. But still, you could object and say, well, I get that, but isn't it just really simple? Racism is wrong. We all know that. I don't do it, so let's just go home. And really, the answer to that is that the subject is more complex than we sometimes allow for. And actually, our hearts are more contradictory and devious than sometimes we allow. And although we don't take on board the whole kind of secular philosophy about unconscious bias and all the kind of ideology that's behind that teaching about discrimination, we do accept that it does sometimes exist, that sometimes unknowingly and sometimes knowingly, we do in all kinds of ways discriminate on the basis of how people look, how people sound, what customs people have. And like all sin, it begins in our hearts with anxieties and with loves and with fears. And we want to put the light of Scripture into our hearts and to make sure that we're honoring God in what we're doing. And the other reason that we wanted to cover this topic was also because it is current, particularly last summer. There was obviously lots of interest, but there's a general tide of seeking to kind of understand and to root out racism. Not so much interest in classism and other forms of prejudice, but certainly in terms of racism there is. And so it is a kind of something that's in public discourse and probably will be again. Obviously, there was an intensity in the summer for all kinds of sociological reasons, partly to do with lockdown and people being constrained and wanting to protest about something. So there's all kinds of things going on in the summer, but certainly it is in public discourse. So we want to look at it for that reason. A couple of disclaimers as we do that. I apologize in advance if I say a wrong word or say a wrong word, sorry, a right word in a wrong way or show my ignorance. Please bear with me in that, but also feel free to point out anything that could be said better. I'm not above reproach at all when it comes to that. It's a very complicated subject. It's acceptable in this country to say people of color, but it's not acceptable to say colored people. And I'm not saying that that's silly, but I'm just saying it means it's quite complicated to have to remember which way around you have to say the terms because of their sort of cultural history and connection. It used to be okay to say Aborigines, but now you have to say Aboriginal people. So again, I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm just saying there's a number of tripwires, and I apologize in advance if I make any mistakes in that, but do feel free to point them out. And the other disclaimer, as we get into it, is that we're not going to cover the whole topic or the whole kind of set of interconnected topics. So we're just going to glance on the topic of slavery just briefly this morning. Might touch on it again when we look in the New Testament. But basically, we're not going to look at the topic of slavery and sort of analyze that. And we're not going to look at colonial history, partly because I don't really understand it. But it's a whole kind of topic area in itself. So we're not going to look at that. We're just going to glance at that when we look at what the Bible has to say about the growth of nations and so on. So this morning, to this morning, it's the longest introduction you'll often hear me ever do. This morning we're going to look at the Old Testament starting in Acts chapter 17. Which is clearly not in the Old Testament, but as a kind of way into looking at the Old Testament. So Acts chapter 17, it'd be good if you had that open and you had Genesis kind of ready to flip over to the early chapters of Genesis in just a minute. So first heading this morning, and actually now we've got the introduction out of the way, the headings are very straightforward, and I think that you'll kind of grab hold of it straight away. First of all, one father, many children. And that's connected with common ancestry and common image. So common ancestry in Adam. Acts chapter 17, verses 26 and 27. From one man, Adam, he made all the nations that they should inhabit the whole earth. And he marked out their appointed times in history and the boundaries of their lands. God did this so they would seek him and perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from any one of us. From one man, Adam, he made every ethnicity, every race. Now, Paul in this sermon, certainly at first look, he's not really addressing the topic of racism, is he? You wouldn't think, well, this is a sermon about racism. But actually, what Paul says here would have gone down like a lead balloon to the Athenians. The Athenians believed, believe this or not, that they sprang up from the native soil around their area. And they definitely thought they were better than the barbarians. And what Paul says, kind of on his way to talking about Jesus, what Paul says is devastating for them, because what Paul says is, all of you guys, Greeks, Romans, Jews, barbarians, slaves, free people, all of you had one father, Adam. All you guys came from the same common stock. So that's the first thing, common father. And we don't need science to help us in that, but actually, science generally points to that being the case. Do you know all humans are 99.9% identical when it comes to their DNA? 99.9%. And of the 0.1% difference, and this is just a fun fact, really, just to hold in your minds. Of the 0.1% that's different, because you've got 99.9 where the same DNA, you've got 0.1 that's different. Of this 0.1 that's different, most of it, 94% of the variation, is among individuals from within a population. You'd have thought it was, you know, that 0.1% was between populations, between different ethnic groups and races. Actually, most of it, 94% of the 1%, sorry, 0.1%, so pretty much all of it, is between national groups. Sorry, within national groups. So I'm statistically probably will have less DNA in common with my wife, Caroline, than I will with someone from across the world who may be physically, ethnically quite different. Does that make sense? It's just an important thing to remember that sometimes we make quite a big thing of physical differences, but they're trivial in terms of the DNA connection with them. It's also true, as another fun fact, that the biggest gene pool is actually in sub-Saharan Africa, which is really fascinating. So basically, if you wiped out all the other nations of the world and just kept kind of sort of Africa and sub-Sahara, then you basically got all the DNA you need, which is also another fun fact, which just helps you in conversation maybe someday with someone to say, well, actually science points to there being a common ancestor. And although evolutionists used to think differently to that, they now sort of think it, although they think it's more of a sort of common ancestor group. So, one father, common ancestry, common image as well. And now we're back into, or we're into, sorry, Genesis. Genesis 1, verse 27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. Sorry, I was going to say him. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. So, one father, common ancestry, but also common image. All share this common feature, being made in God's image. So whatever color, shape, age, gender, intelligence, health, social class, you as a human being, wherever you are in the world, whenever you lived in the history of this world, are made in the image of God. And although we share DNA with the animal kingdom, this is not something shared by any other creature on earth, to be made in the image of God. Whatever your skin color, whatever your facial characteristics, whatever your hair texture, every human being on the planet who has ever lived, of every ethnic or racial group, has an immortal soul, has godlike reasoning powers, has a job to do in terms of ruling the earth under God's instruction, has a heart capacity for moral judgments, has spiritual affections, and has the potential for a relationship with God. We are made in the image of God, and this is the common experience across the world. Third thing, under this heading, diverse population. So one father in terms of a common ancestor, a common image, but also a diverse population. The history of the world since Adam is one of cultural diversity following the creative variety of God's creation. So you look at Genesis 4, verse 20, talking about some of Adam's sons. Adah gave birth to Jabal. He was the father of those who live in tents and raise livestock. His brother's name was Jubal. He was the father. Would you like to name two of your children? That'd be great for playgroup and schools. One called, anyway, Jubal. He was the father of all who played string instruments and pipes. Zillah also had a son, Tubal-Cain, who forged all kinds of tools out of bronze and iron. Now, why is that interesting? Here's Adam's children and their children's children and the kind of population beginning to fan out. You've got a farmer, you've got a musician, you've got an engineer. So you've got developing culture. And this is not part of the curse. As we'll see in a minute, it's influenced by the curse. It's tainted by the curse. But this is part of the blessing of God. This is part of the variety of God's creation that different cultures develop. Agricultural cultures, artistic culture, industrial, developing, engineering type of skills. And along with that, nations and tribes develop. So you go over to Genesis 10, which has the so-called Table of Nations, a kind of list of nations that will then sort of lead us out and take us through to Abraham fairly shortly. So chapter 10 of Genesis and verse 5, for example, from these, this group of people, the maritime people spread out into their territories by their clans within the nations, each with its own language. And then verse 20, these are the sons of Ham by their clans and languages in their territories and nations. And verse 32, these are the clans of Noah's sons, according to their lines of descent within their nations. From these nations, they spread out over the whole earth after the flood. All tribes and peoples and nations, an expression of the image of God, but also expressing the diversity of God in the way that they spread out. And because of the persistence of certain characteristics within those groups, as they spread out with their particular language and culture, not because of the big scale evolution from single cell through to human beings, but because of the natural selection that happens, then physical characteristics within those groups, within those tribes and nations, physical characteristics were clustered together. And that gave rise to race and also culturally clustering together, giving rise to ethnicity. So that's the first point, that's the longest point. Which is kind of foundational. I mean, just got a couple of others to look at. So just standing back from that first point, which is one father, many children, I just want to say three things very quickly. First is this. It's obvious, but we have to say it. All human beings, including those in the womb, all human beings are to be equally valued and treated with the same respect, irrespective of age, race, class. Because of our common ancestry, but particularly because we have in common that we are made in the image of God. And the diversity that happened as people spread out is not part of God's plan to divide us. It doesn't justify division and hatred. We're all made in the image of God, so we're against racism because of the God-given dignity to every human being. That's the first thing to say. And connected with that, the second thing is this. Actually, the Christian view of what it is to be human is the only basis for racial equality. Actually, the Christian anthropology, in other words, what it is to be a human being, it's foundational and it's the only real basis for being against racism and being for justice and fair treatment for everybody. There's a really stark illustration of where thoughtful evolution leads. 1906 is the year, and a gentleman called Otto Benga from the Congo, from the pygmy tribe, was displayed in a cage at New York Zoo. 1906, a pygmy, a human being made in the image of God, descended from Adam, displayed in a cage in New York Zoo. And how was that allowed? And it's not often spoken about, but the whole stream that followed Charles Darwin and Origin of Species and Survival of the Fittest and the possibility of different branches of the tree, some humans being more developed than other human beings, provided a very reasonable backdrop and justification for that. It's true also in the acceleration of mistreatment among the Aboriginal people in Australia in the late 1800s. And actually, evolution gave cover for what Hitler did with suggesting that the superior race. Now, of course, that's not to say most people who believe in evolution are necessarily racist, but it's where the philosophy leads, because there is actually, apart from being no basis for morality at all, there's no basis for particular human dignity in the equality of humans, because it's all about survival of the fittest. And actually, in the confusion of all that, that leads people to actually think, well, if there's nothing special about human beings, then we kind of instinctively know we ought to treat people well. So perhaps we ought to treat animals just as well at the same time. So actually, what happens is it kind of fans out to saying, well, because we're really no different from animals, perhaps we ought to treat animals with the same rights that we treat humans. Now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with vegetarianism or veganism as a sort of principle or as a decision about what you make, but sometimes the ideological roots of that can be in a misunderstanding of what it is to be human as distinct from what it is to be an animal. So I think that's really important to kind of underline and understand that only the Christian view of what it is to be human is the ultimate basis for racial equality. And third thing to derive from that is that we can and must celebrate cultural diversity. There are many things that we come across in other cultures which are new to us, and mostly we can celebrate those things. And actually, understanding the cultural background of a person is about loving them, is about understanding their personal history. It's about getting to know them. Now, that's not the same as saying that there are equally valid ways of behaving in any culture and that we should just embrace all of them. Not all cultures are equally good. Some things are morally bad as far as God sees it. But that's just critiquing particular behaviours. But generally speaking, we want to celebrate cultural diversity as something good that flows out of God's creative variety. Okay, first point, over. Second point is that we are all fallen. We are all fallen. After Adam and Eve sin, after Adam and Eve disobey what God told them to do, after Adam and Eve decide that they should be the boss and that they should decide what is right and wrong, there is immediate conflict between them. They start blaming each other for what happened. There's even worse conflict between their two sons, Cain and Abel, as Cain kills Abel. There is the beginnings of religion as people call on the name of the Lord, but that develops into false religion. That, as Paul says, people are seeking God, but they're seeking him in all kinds of false ways. Because although they instinctively know they're made in the image of God, without God's revelation, they don't know this God and they don't know how to worship this God. And then into this situation of cultural diversity, which is good, but also religion that's gone bad, the world develops into an evil place and God sends a flood to judge. And then Noah and his family come out of the ark. And Noah has three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, and we're all descended from them. It seems that the sons of Ham would include those in Arabia and the African peoples as well. And then Japheth maybe towards Europe. And Shem also in the kind of Middle East area as well. But as Noah and his family come out of the ark, sin is still present, isn't it? The problem of sin and the problem of false religion that will follow hasn't been dealt with at all. And we get this bizarre incident that happens just after Noah's come out of the ark. He builds a vineyard and he gets drunk. And he's naked and he's shamed by his son Ham. And because of that, there's a curse from Noah. I'm not sure quite the status of that curse. It's more of a prophecy about what will happen to Canaan. But there's a curse on one of Ham's sons, Canaan. And it's probably worth just saying in passing that some people have used that curse, the curse of Noah on Ham, to justify slavery in the past. There's no basis for doing that on the text itself. It's not on Ham anyway. It's on Canaan. But also, it has a particular relevance and history in terms of the people of Israel and the land of Canaan and what they will end up doing, those tribes that are in the land of Canaan and their idolatry and so forth. And then just in a really quick history, we're going to go well fast now. We have the Tower of Babel, where cultural diversity, which is good, leads to pride. Industry, which is good, leads to pride, and they build this tower, and God decides that they should be scattered even further and confused in their language in some way. So although that diversity is part of blessing, that diversity is also becomes part of the judgment of God. It will aid the spreading out, but it will also, to some degree, create difference. And it becomes a matter of fear and competition and greed. And you've got sophisticated towns developed, like the town of Ur. If you go to the British Museum and you see where Abraham came from, the city of Ur, very sophisticated, although they worshipped idols and so forth, but in terms of the technology, pretty sophisticated place. So you've got industry developing and culture developing and agriculture developing, but at the same time, false religion developing and warring tribes. Fights, battles. Armies needing to be formed to defend, fear, exploitation, greed, all those things between nations. And within that, discrimination. That's the second point. All fallen. One father, all fallen. Third point, last point, some are chosen. Some are chosen. You might be thinking, well, okay, we're doing a quick survey of the Old Testament. Isn't what happens next a kind of racial, ethnic discrimination that God does because he chooses Israel? Because there, right at the beginning, soon after the Tower of Babel, we have the call of Abraham, who becomes Abraham. And it's true that in this, God does discriminate, doesn't he? He chooses one man, Abraham. But he chooses this one man in order to bless the nations. In fact, all the nations. But even in that first instance of choosing this one man and building a nation from this one man, what is God doing? He is sovereignly because he's a ruler, he's choosing to show love. He's not showing unfair treatment to anybody of all the nations of the world. He's not discriminating in that sense. He's not showing injustice or unfair harm to anybody in the world. What he's doing is stretching out and showing love to one particular person and building a nation to that person. And actually, from that nation, offering blessings to all the nations of the world. You see, the nations around aren't guilt-free, but neither is Israel. You see, God doesn't choose Abraham, or indeed the nation of Israel, because of their physical superiority. It mentions in Deuteronomy 7 about they weren't chosen because they were tall. They weren't chosen because they were going to be winners. They weren't chosen because they were kind of intellectually superior to the nations around them, or morally superior. Abraham's a bit of a basket case in terms of the lies that he tells and the lack of faith at times. He's chosen by God's sovereign love, intervening in mercy and in grace. And it's in order to bring blessings to the nations. And actually, as the nation of Israel develops, they're supposed to be a light to all the other nations. And you get little kind of tokens, little shafts of light that say, actually, God's doing something much bigger than just doing something with the nation of Israel. He's working towards something that's going to bless all the nations. And it's really interesting, right at the beginning, do you know Moses marries a Cushite woman? And what happens is Miriam, his sister, at a point, kind of one of the low points of the grumbling points in the history of Israel. So Miriam, Moses' sister, grumbles and complains about Moses' wife. Now it's a bit complicated working out sort of ethnically and sort of color and physique what Abraham looked like. There's Esau, who was kind of red in color, so it's trying to work out, and people do lots of studies to try and sort of work out from DNA and various things what he might have looked out. But either way, it's probably significant that Moses' wife probably would have been black African, probably, from the descriptions of Cushites that are in the Bible. And Moses maybe more sort of Arabian tribe sort of look. And so you get, fascinatingly, you get a kind of racial discrimination going on there. And you know what? God intervenes and actually judges Miriam severely for that. She's actually inflicted, ironically, with a skin disease as a judgment on her for what she says against Moses. Because God is furious about it. And then a bit later on, you get the story of Rahab, the prostitute from another culture, actually from Canaan, that had been cursed by Noah. And Rahab is incorporated into the people of God. You get the wealthy Boaz a bit later on, who marries a Moabitess. And the Moabites had a really unpleasant ancestry, if you want to read about that, in the Old Testament. But in one of these great love stories, Boaz falls in love with the character, particularly of Ruth. And Ruth then finds her way, a Moabitess, into the genealogy, the line of descent, through to Jesus. And then you get individuals like Naaman, Syrian commander. You get Nebuchadnezzar, who it seems became a believer of sorts. You get the whole city of Nineveh, who repent. And then as the Bible story develops, you've got Israel, that are a nation that are a light to other nations, that are showing a welcome to other individuals who want to join and become part of the worshipping people of God. And then as you get towards the end of the Old Testament, you've got prophecies that start to expand on the idea that through someone, a coming person, the Messiah, the Christ, the servant of the Lord, all the nations will be blessed. And so Paul, back in Acts, he says, God made everybody from this one man. Common ancestry, common image, cultural diversity. God determined where you would live, the nation that you would be part of, the culture that you would grow up in. So cultural diversity happening. But because of the fall, a distortion of our differences and a distortion of our religion. And all of that is waiting, says Paul, for the coming of Christ. And Paul goes on then to say, now Christ has come, now is the time to repent and believe. Leading up to that point in history, God is working sovereignly through all nations. You all have this in common, common ancestry, common image. But you're only ultimately going to find meaning, fulfillment, purpose, dignity, unity in Christ. And we're going to look at more of that, the coming of Christ, what that means for tribes and nations next week. But let's just stand back again and just remember that we are against any form of hurt or harm or undervaluing people because they're made in the image of God, because we share common ancestry, because we recognize that sin has distorted our differences, although we can celebrate many of them. And to recognize too that ultimately that warring, that fear of difference, that industry and artistry kind of striving for some meaning, all of that can only find meaning, can only find fulfillment when we recognize Christ as the ultimate king over all the nations.